If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon now. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. We have an exciting show today. We got Commissioner Jeremy Matlow in studio. You know, I've warned him that I'm in a foul mood for so many different reasons. I mean, I know, you know, look, FSU is 0-4, Clemson is 2-2. Oh, man, my Clemson Tigers. And, you know, and we've got this corruption stuff in town. We've got these eight-hour blueprint meetings, which I have to cover, or I get emails saying, why didn't you cover this? And so, anyway, he's, despite all of that, he has decided to come into our studio here. We're going to ask him some tough questions. I told him ahead of time that, you know, we've got some tough questions here. There's some things that I'm concerned about here locally. And then we've got some, you know, some good things going on also. But I want to go ahead and take this opportunity to welcome City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow to the studios.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
I appreciate you coming in. And I guess last night, what was it, 7 hours?
Yeah, about seven and a half.
So let's cover that real quick. That was the blueprint meeting. The big topic was the $20 million. I guess the $20 million funding that FSU requested for some stadium upgrades. And the more I looked at this, is like, I think the ultimate question was, how did you guys actually get there? But talk about, real quick, if you could, it was an 8-4 vote. You voted against it. Just talk about your philosophy on that $20 million request by FSU.
Yeah, so over the next 20 years, we're going to collect about $100 million. That's supposed to go towards economic developments, creating jobs in our community, promoting businesses. And really what happened back in May, you know, kind of out of the blue, we only got a 1 week's notice. This agenda item popped up saying Florida State's requesting $20 million to do part of their renovations, some of them dealing with safety, some of them dealing with, you know, upgrading seats and those sorts of things, a huge $100 million project. And largely, it didn't check the boxes for me. It wasn't really about economic development. Obviously, football drives a lot of economic activity in our area, but this investment wouldn't drive additional activity, which I think is really what this money is supposed to go for. And we know, I believe, you know, the boosters in Florida State will deliver on a great project, whether we funded it or not. So it's one of those things you have to weigh all the options and really look at the opportunity costs and what you're giving up. And when we learned last week that we wouldn't be able to bond any projects till at least 2028, and this is about 20% of our revenue for 20 years, I just, not something I could support.
But in defense of the people who supported this, I mean, the argument is that they are going to add some extra events there by making these changes. So the idea is that $20 million is going to help spur additional economic development. I mean, that's what their promise is.
Yeah, we've heard that, but what was presented to us was really the only new jobs created were based on the construction jobs that were going to be temporary while right. It was, they were not able to demonstrate a long-term gain in jobs. And, you know, we just did Amazon for about $1 million, 1,000 jobs, and here's $20 million and not really new jobs.
Right. And so I think the other discussion we had off air here was, you know, looking at, so you got, you know, this economic development money, which I didn't support to begin with as being part of the blueprint. We were moving along very good with just doing infrastructure projects. But now we got $10 million that went to FAMU for their stadium, $20 million that goes to FSU for their stadium, and I think about $1.5 million went to TCC. So it was really sort of an athletic economic development budget. I mean, how did that happen?
It's devolved into that, and you know, I've been really critical that Blueprint doesn't have real policies to direct how we do these things. It doesn't have enough public participation on the front end. So I think a lot of people have been worried that this 12% would, you know, come up as more of a slush fund where people can just grab in and take rather than going through a fair process. So we hear a lot about the Blueprint Road projects that dated back to 2014 and how it took years and years of public input to decide what those are on. But on these economic development dollars, you know, it just seems to be caution to the wind. So it's hard because, I mean, we went from a $20 million convention center, and then in 1 week that became a $40 million convention center when Florida State didn't be able to bring their end to the table. Then $10 million of that got taken away and shifted to Bragg. And it's kind of like, I think we really need to say, is this agency doing what we want it to do? Do we just want to spend this money on big projects and close it down? Or do we actually have a long-term goal of how this agency is going to spend money?
All right. So, and then pivoting to the Amazon project, which I think you supported. You supported that. So that was this, so that would be a, you use that as a comparison to the FSU project. That is a worthy, in your view, a worthy economic development project?
I think it is. So I have hesitations of spending tax dollars on a company like Amazon, which I think we may be able to attract without spending them. But I voted yes for that just based on the merits of what I think these funds are for. If we've said we created these funds for economic development, it's hard to say no to that project because I think it was the purpose that the voters wanted these funds to go towards.
Right. And then all right, we'll stick on the economic development side of this. You know, there's been some, I mean, you've made some comments about subsidies to developers and, you know, developers in any local community can be, you know, viewed as sort of the boogeyman because, you know, here we don't have a lot of out-of-town developers. They're mostly local developers. It's not like a bigger city. But one of the things was the Northeast Gateway. And I was trying to understand this. And I talked to your aide who was very informative on some of the issues here. But so you view, so the Northeast Gateway is a road, which is going to be about $55 million, I think, from the blueprint infrastructure. But you view that as a subsidy to developers. Explain that.
Right, absolutely. So when that road project was first proposed to us, and at that time it was the Shamrock Extension, we did a traffic study. And what we learned was, based on existing conditions, only 500 cars a day would use that road. So it wasn't solving any traffic problems. And really the push has been that we need to develop, you know, these 4,000 acres in Mulani who are all owned by a single property owner at this point, to bring a gateway up to rural Centerville Road. I debate whether that's a gateway into the city. You know, I've spent some time out there. I think it's a very rural community. So this roadway project really, I think, was threatening a lot of the nearby neighborhoods who were concerned about traffic implications. And historically, new development has always paid for itself as far as roadways and new transit and transportation and paid into fees. It's very bizarre to build, put city funds into a roadway before any type of development's even been proposed yet out there.
Yeah. Well, so, but on the other side of this, the city, and this was before your time, I mean, that's part of the urban services area. Part of the trade-off for the city is they get to get property taxes from development that is there. We've got to have, I know that, I think you would agree that we've sort of been landlocked in the sense that we don't have a lot of land for development in terms of neighborhoods that are close to the city. This is actually, again, inside, you know, it's the closest undeveloped land. So the subsidies, when those homes are built, Canopy neighborhood is already built. I mean, those houses are selling very fast. There's obviously high demand. So how would you deal with the growth if you're not, I mean, you know, the idea is to sort of look out, you know, 15 to 20 years. Of course, when you build a road, you don't want it to be at capacity when you build it. That would be the idea. So how do you, so when do you build that road? Is it just, do you wait for there to be, I'll tell you, there are parents that, and I'm one of them, that go to pick up their kid at Montford, and there needs to be some relief out there somewhere because of the traffic. But how do you propose moving forward with growth if you don't sort of anticipate where growth's going to be?
Right. And when new developments come online, I think part of their building capacity needs to be to absorb that cost as it goes. That's historically how it's been done. But right now, I mean, to your point, we're facing capacity issues on Thomasville Road. People are coming in Mahan and trying to get across Capitol Circle. This project isn't solving any of those real solutions that we've already created. So I'm a huge proponent of new development, increasing density in the urban services area. Unfortunately, we expanded it to include 4,000 rural acres, which I disagree with. But when we really invest in density and nearby and we build up instead of out, we get a return on our investment. So when we see these investments in this 4,000 acres, and especially in the beginning, it was going to be a lot of single family homes and some ranch style properties, that return you get from those property taxes don't really absorb everything you put in on the front end. And there's calculators online. You can go look at, you know, density per acre to see how much it actually costs to serve that area. Because it's not just building the roads. It's a whole new section of the city where police will need to be covered, fire services, you know, utilities,
But they're all going to pay property taxes. They're going to pay utilities. They're going to pay for the wastewater and stuff. Look, we'll continue. We're going to continue this. I'm not going to have the last word. I won't do that to a city commissioner. So when we get back, we'll continue this riveting discussion on the development. So stay tuned.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. We've got City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow in studio, and we're talking about something that I just know is exciting to everyone here, is subsidies. You know, we were talking about developers and government subsidizing growth, and you know, my thought on this is government is in the business of subsidizing. I mean, it's really taking money from one area and subsidizing it into behavior that they want. Here, the city wants growth. They want property taxes. They want more electric utility customers. All right. So it's not really, I don't think you could be an elected official and be against subsidies. It's sort of about where you subsidize. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think really looking at, you know, the project we were just talking about, it really, to me, boils down to whose tax dollars are they? And it's the people who've already paid into the system that still need investments. And we're funding road projects for people who maybe don't even live here yet, haven't paid into the system at all yet.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, and that's a tough one to try to reconcile. But I mean, one of the other things that we hear a lot about is the equity of these subsidies and the equity of the investment. And I know that you've made some comments and about maybe the South Side not getting their share, or the West Side. I think on Tharp Street you did something about sidewalks. And again, one of the things I thought was the strength of Blueprint was how these projects are distributed across Leon County. Do you think that there's a conscious effort not to address some issues in certain parts of town, or do you think that Blueprint has done a decent job of trying to get infrastructure in, you know, all areas of Leon County?
Well, I think the areas that really need the investment the most continue to be put on the back burner. Tharp Street going out west, where there's still drainage ditches, and you know that's been a project in the pipeline forever. Same thing with Orange Avenue over in front of NIMS. So while these are Blueprint projects, they continue to be moved down the list, and we continue to expand other projects. I'm very concerned by the time we get to them, we're not going to have enough money to fulfill them. And also the projects that we're advanced funding, we're borrowing money to skip the line, which is, you know, the Wilani project and enlarged airport gateway as well, which I don't think the need is there. So it's just a weird mix of priorities where there's actually need, those projects are getting pushed further and further behind.
Now, I would agree with you on Tharp and Orange, but there has been significant investment on the South Side in terms of Orange, a certain part of Orange Avenue, obviously FAMU Way. I know you don't agree with a lot of the airport gateway stuff, but there's some stuff slated there for Bradfordville Road, obviously, not Bradfordville, Bradford Road. So, I mean, so there is, but you do highlight two of the areas. So I think that's important. But there's also, I mean, we're doing a lot in, and you maybe could inform our listeners on this. I know that I saw we're doing a lot in Frenchtown neighborhood. We just passed something on the city commission in Griffin neighborhood. Where does that money come from? Is that city money or is that Blueprint money?
It's that is city money. And I mean, it's just interesting. Like a lot of these neighborhoods had to organize and really advocate for just direct investment in their neighborhood. So a lot of these investments are going to things like parks and sidewalks. You know, we've seen new sidewalks park. Pop up and say bet in on Mitchell. Like these neighborhoods didn't have to get a plan together to say this is what we want. So I think these are neighborhoods that have historically haven't been able to get just the basic investments that they need, and they've come together collectively and said, well, this is what will be helpful. So there's been a couple million dollars per neighborhood over the next few years.
So those are getting some attention, and that's and it's needed, as you had said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things I ran for office on. I know some of the other commissioners agree as well. So it's not doom and gloom. I don't think we're doing nothing. I just think that everybody has different priorities, and I'm really focused on some of these neglected areas.
Right, and one of the things though is trying to get people on the same page. And I've just resigned. You're never going to find something that everybody agrees with. I saw this Thomasville Road multi-use path. And I thought it was a great idea just looking at it. But boy, the number of people that contacted me before the meeting and said they were concerned about it. I mean, if you look in some of these bigger cities, or even some of these more retro cities, like I think in North Carolina, maybe it was Greenville or Raleigh. I mean, these are the type of paths that they do to sort of connect some of these placemaking. But we've got, I don't know where you are on this. I know that there was a meeting that facilitated. Talk about how difficult it is to get these people on the same page and to really pull the trigger and vote for something, even though there are people that are against something like this.
Right. And I think that it's getting that public participation on the front end and recognizing some of the constraints and challenges. I'm a huge supporter in multimodal transportation and more bike lanes and more pedestrian. I think there's a shift towards that direction. But some of the safety concerns, especially from some of the property owners and business owners on Thomasville Road, are speaking to how fast the traffic's driving and is it a safety concern for people entering their businesses. And I think those are valid arguments, and I don't think it's an all or nothing deal. But we hadn't had a final path to really see who or where it would affect. So I think that is part of the art to see is like, can we make this a safe path and connect these places, or do we have to look at something completely different? And I haven't weighed in one way or the other because I was still collecting information from both the public who hadn't really had a whole lot of say in changing the project, as well as waiting for our staff to tell us what pathways they're even considering.
But I think the point too, though, is that if you look at FAMU Way, you look at the Northeast Gateway, you can't get everybody. You're going to vote against somebody. You look at the termination of the Northeast Gateway. You try to negotiate there. You're always going to be voting. I don't know if it's social media. It seems like just nobody wants to agree with anything, and you're always going to be voting against someone on these issues.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. We have to we have to listen to everybody, and we have to make the best decision based on what we think is best for the community and still represent the people who elected us to office. I think, that's critical. So we'll disappoint everybody from time to time, but hopefully people can see that our intention is to do what's best for Tallahassee, and we vote that way, and they can appreciate that as we go.
All right, so let's pivot real quick in the last 2 minutes, and we'll continue it in the next segment on the ethics part. Obviously, we've had two trials, and then we had a sentencing, and it seems like that there's a part of the community, and I think I'd be included in that we want to see action based on what we've seen here. We've done a couple stories about some of the things that came out in the trial. You came out with an ethics proposal, which mirrors a lot of things that other people have talked about. And you can see that proposal on TallahassreePorts.com. But it has to do with lobbyists, which we talked about. We've got to start regulating lobbyists more because there's been an issue there. In the next minute or so, just talk about that ethics proposal and what are the next steps from a city of Tallahassee perspective.
Sure. And to me, it's like we got to figure out how to solve this issue. If we can do anything, it's got to be putting our government on the right track. And unfortunately, a couple of convictions, I don't think fixes the issue. So we've been soliciting outside proposals for how they can be helpful. We did a community meeting. We're going to do a town hall on October 6th to get more proposals. The Ethics Board has given some proposals, and then bring them to the City Commission for a vote.
When is that?
I'm not sure. We started this conversation at our last meeting, but the mayor quickly adjourned it before I could really hear from my colleagues. So hopefully we'll bring this up at the next meeting and get a date locked in.
Yeah, and now the point I would make here is that, look, I have some disagreements with Commissioner Matlow on some of the positions on growth, and I respect his positions on those. But this I totally agree with, and this is something that I know really well, running for office for the last 10 years. There's a group of people, and they happen to be in the public relations field, that have been they have enabled this thing. They have enabled what's gone on here in the last 10 years. I mean, all you got to do is go and look at TallahassreePorts.com, and there was a PR firm hey, I'm going to name him, Vancouver Jones, who signed an agreement in 2013 to lobby for JT Burnett and, quote, influence local government. They never registered to lobby. This is an issue, and we've got to deal with it, and we can't be shy about it. We're going to continue this discussion when we get back, more about ethics proposals and also, you know, sort of the the goings on between Commissioner Matlow and the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce. Maybe we can broker a deal right here. So anyway, stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this break.
It's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. All right, so far, we're talking about the ethics issues, and we agree that the lobbyist part of this equation has to be reined in. So Commissioner Matlow and I agree on that. And it's these public relations people that run campaigns, get contracts with local government, and then they lobby for people. It's like a trifecta. Is there anything we can do in ordinances to stop that? Or is that something that just needs to be disclosed so that we can, so that the media can like just blow it out there and say, oh, red flag. I mean, is there two different things there? Can we really put a hurdle up in the way of somebody who's making money?
Well, first off, I think elected officials can just say, if you worked on my campaign, I don't go apply for contracts. You know, you should have that type of relationship with the people you work with. But I mean, I think we recognize we're a small town and a lot of different people have, you know, worked together. My issue isn't with, my biggest issue is like, let's just say what happened and let's fix it. We can all fix this together. So, you know, I've been critical of JT Burnett, my landlord on Gain Street, Talcor's campaign contributions. And it's not me like going after them. It's just saying we can do better than this. And I think it's going to take all of us to maybe just swallow our pride and say, how can we stop this from happening in the future? But as far as letting the public know, the registrations are huge. You know, what we learned through this trial of people who are lobbying, you know, directly on some of the contracts involved, directly on some of the things that I'm against and never registering. If the public doesn't have that information, how can they choose good elected officials? Like, we can't stop people from being bad. We can't stop Commissioner Maddox from going out and trying to break the law or accept briberies. But what we can do is give the public the information they need to see what's going on.
Right. And part of my critique of what's going on now is it seems like everybody now wants to beat up on Scott Maddox as like, this is the, you know, this is it. We've got the guy. And it's actually really, my argument is this is part of a system. And you've got into a back and forth with the Greater Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce as one of the institutions. And correct me if I'm wrong here, that sort was in a position that sort of facilitated or enabled some of this behavior. Is that a correct sort of assessment of what you think?
My main criticism of the chamber was, you know, they're involved in so many different policies and come out and speak, but on this issue they hadn't weighed in at all. And it's not the chamber collectively. I respect the majority of the businesses, a lot of people on the chamber board, some of them I consider friends, but it has been this network of people in the upper levels of leadership in the chamber over the years that have been the go-to people who were collecting lots of campaign finance, campaign checks, working with people like Vancouver Jones to select candidates and really push them. And I think, and in return, a lot of, you know, real estate and developer interests, I think, did benefit from those candidates being in office. And that's the spotlight that I'm trying to shine. It's not saying, you know, the chamber's bad and we can't do anything with them together. Again, it's, we have to recognize everything that got us here. And, you know, signing letters, encouraging Scott Maddox to come back and the height of this, yeah, that concerns me. And nobody was talking about it. Everybody was saying, we're done, let's move forward.
Yeah, but I think, look, part of that is, you're right. I mean, the chamber is an institution, and you're arguing that they haven't really come out. But there are other institutions in the community that haven't really stepped forward either. I mean, you've been pretty focused on some of your criticism. I mean, the Tallahassee Democrat is an institution that really hasn't owned up at all to their coverage of some of this corruption issues over the last 10 years. We've got other chambers of commerce. We've got the Big Bend Minority Chamber of Commerce that Sean Pittman was the founder. I mean, Andrew Gillum, you know, he paid a fine for, I think, a $5,000 fine for dealing with undercover FBI agents. We don't hear, we don't hear a lot of the talk. It's been focused on Scott Maddox. We don't hear a lot of the broadening of this, that this is a system problem, not, you know, just a Scott Maddox problem. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So I ran for office, and one of my first campaign ads, I said, if we want meaningful change, we need to turn this system upside down. And I said that not knowing the breadth of the corruption that was happening here. I was just a business owner noticing that when you tried to approach the city, it kind of fell on deaf ears. So, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, I think most of the major institutions are probably unhappy with me. Do I think the Democrats' coverage during the Maddox era missed it? Absolutely. How did they not see that happening? You know, I point to relationships of should publishers of newspapers sit on boards and executive committees with other business interests. It's like, I think the role of the press should be almost confrontational and with everyone, including me, right? I think that is a role that's necessary. I mean, I've been critical of the Edison Project and the New York trips and the Vegas trips. I'm not condoning any of that. I think it was all wrong, absolutely. But I do think we're a town where we can't just cancel everybody, but we have to bring everybody in, admit that things are bad, and fix them.
Yeah, and you would agree, back to the chamber thing, 99% of the businesses, local businesses, have nothing to do with this corruption.
Absolutely. I've been a member of the chamber previously. You know, I shop at these businesses. I do businesses with a lot of businesses. I've never attacked the individual businesses, but I do think from a leadership perspective, like, bring us some proposals. You know, we get proposals on poverty from the chamber. We get proposals on development from the chamber, on third grade reading scores. Let us know that you're following the conversation and you want to be a part of the solution. And that was my message in my op-ed.
All right. Competitive bids, and this sort of racks it. This goes in with the whole development, growth, and obviously ethics, I think, too. There was a little bit of a brouhaha over the two lots downtown. There is an $8 million offer made for the property to build from a company that's not here, not tied up locally at all. Money wanting to be invested here with a company that had a good reputation in building hotels. Your issue was competitive bids, and we've talked about this off the air. And instead of me rehashing that, there is a situation. I mean, competitive bids is a good process, but that doesn't mean you always take the highest price.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, on that project, I would have just really liked to see other offers and compare them. You know, we've done a tremendous investment on Gain Street from the stadium to Cascades Park. We've seen lots of large-scale developers interested in the area. And when I look at two complete city blocks downtown in the heart of our city, and I told the Valencia group at the meeting, like, I actually think it's a good project. I just wish we weren't having, you know, this discussion today, and it would have been put out to RFP a year and a half ago when we initially voted to do that, and we were actually considering the proposals side by side. Because if somebody wants to give us $10 million and they say, oh, I'm giving you $10 million, I want to keep this as volleyball courts forever, or I want to give you $8 million and I want to build pools and offices and hotels, yeah, we can use common sense, but we should collect the offers, because I think it increases competition and we get better offers. So maybe we get $9 or $10 million in a competitive bid from the Valencia group rather than just eight. And that, I think, is the whole point of the competitive nature, is to get the best return on the property for the taxpayers, but also to just present to the public that it's an open and fair process and anybody could apply.
Right. So you actually, I mean, so that project, I mean, you sort of, it, other than the competitive bid process, you would be on board with that project in terms of what it's doing.
I would be. I mean, it's two complete city blocks for $8 million, and then right down the road, we sold 1 acre for $4 million. So I feel like the value of that property was higher. We never did a second appraisal. We never took other offers, and I don't know. So that's my biggest contention with it not being competitive. I think we could have gotten more money for it, frankly. But as far as like what it'll do downtown and change that area and that really underutilized space, I think it's a good project.
All right, one more thing on sort of the economy, and then when we get back, we'll talk about some more emotional issues that I'm having a hard time with. But the You like to cite, I mean, you cite the poverty issues that we have here in town. I think one of the things I read, you said there's some neighborhoods with poverty at 40% and unemployment high. You know, I think obviously growth, from my perspective, Amazon, building houses, you know, provides jobs, which addresses that. Why do we have neighborhoods that are 40% poverty? Do we know why? Is it because they can't get jobs? Is it because they're not educated? Is it because they, you know, I don't know. They don't. I mean, I'm sure you hire people. Some people just don't want to work. I mean, why are these poverty? Why are these neighborhoods have such high poverty rates?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's historic and it's been systemic, and it's that lack of investment and really, you know, with that level of concentrated poverty and the lack of external investment, you know, there's a lot of neighborhoods that there aren't jobs within walking distance. People who don't have cars, we don't have a public transportation system where you can get across town in, you know, less than an hour. I think all those things build into it. And I think there's no, if you want to help people come out of poverty in those areas, you're going to have to take risks that I think, frankly, people aren't willing to do when you can invest in other places and get a guaranteed delivery. And I think that's not just the private sector, that's the government as well. So I was critical of the $20 million to Florida State, because I imagine what just a couple million dollars directed at people who actually want to do business at a very small scale and create jobs. Because we can't go, you know, everyone talks about gentrification, we can't just put something big on top of them. It's how do we engage the people who want to do well. And we have people we know in Frenchtown who are working on building up businesses there. And how do we really give them the tools and resources they need to be successful?
So as a business owner, you agree, I mean, a job is an answer to a lot of these problems.
Yeah, I think it's a piece of the puzzle. I don't think it's the end-all be-all to every issue. You know, we had a 25% poverty rate when we were approaching full employment before the pandemic started. So there's issues there. I mean, it's wages, it's good jobs, it's transportation, it's housing, affordable housing. It's everything. It's hard to wrap your arms around it altogether. But I think creating more jobs is definitely part of what we need to do.
All right, when we get back, we're going to pivot to sort of my pet peeve of some of these commissioners addressing national issues and just sort of dividing the community. And that's what I'm a little bit upset about. So we'll get Commissioner Matlow's position on some of these things. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here. I only got a few minutes left, a lot of stuff to get to. One of the things on the development side I wanted to get you to explain real quick. We talk about we were talking about subsidies and non-competitive bids. The CRA, they engaged with a developer from Jacksonville, or not a developer, I guess he's a developer, from Jacksonville in this Frenchtown development. Talk about why you were okay with that. It was a non-competitive bid. It was almost a lot like the property downtown. They cobbled together a proposal. A CRA, I think, donated some land. And so how is that different?
Sure. You know, one of the chief differences for me is the downtown property happened in about a week. And this downtown Frenchtown proposal had been, you know, contemplated for several years and had come to the CRA a few times. You know, the redevelopment agency operates a little differently because it's only real focus is redevelopment within its boundary. So, you know, we've shifted a lot of that to public infrastructure investment, ended a lot of the large student housing developments. And this one was one that different people have been working on a long time. And it garnered a lot of neighborhood support from residents in Frenchtown who came and spoke in favor of it. Was it my favorite project? You know, no. I mean, I it's not that I want to say no to every subsidy or every development. I just, you know, my North Star is always like, let's invest in the public infrastructure. But I mean, there's nuance, there's balance. And this was one that I think had collected enough support and was doing the mission of the CRA.
Commissioner Jeremy Matlow just used my favorite word, nuance. We got nuance. But the issue on that, though, I mean, I don't even know the developers from Jacksonville. I don't know how he got involved And we're, you know, there's some more questions about that. But the CRA obviously has a history of having some issues because of what you're saying. They're redeveloping, draws a lot of developers in. But anyway, I appreciate that distinction. All right, let's pivot to sort of my look. I first ran because for office because it was local politics. I was tired of the national scene. I'm even more tired of it now, obviously. But it was a nonpartisan office. And all right, good. I can deal with that. Let's deal with issues. I'm a policy guy. And it worked for a while. And then all of a sudden, I started getting labeled as a Republican. And they sent out pictures with me and Sarah Palin and Rick Scott. You know, the local, good local stuff, you know? So, and then we got Mayor Andrew Gillum who started talking about Syrian refugees and stuff that's just not local. I want a mayor. I want a city commission that's dealing with stuff locally. All right. And so some issues you're dealing with here. We got, you know, something that really sent me through the roof. And it's not because of the position. I understand there's going to be differences on pro-life, pro-choice, abortion. We have a resolution that the city commission, which is dominated by nonpartisan officials, is going to take a position on abortion. Tell me that's not going to happen. I know it got pulled because there were people concerned about it. Tell me it's not going
to
happen.
Well, I expect it to come back because they're standing board direction to do it.
So from who? Do you know who that's from?
It can't. So there was a motion by Commissioner Richardson, and okay. It passed unanimously to bring it back.
So all of you wanted it back.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, to your point, I think there are, we have seen local office used as a stepping stone to project, you know, different positions on things to run for higher office and whatnot. I obviously ran for local office because I care about local issues and don't really have a whole lot of interest in what's happening out there. But, you know, on that particular vote, I mean, it does come a time we have a duty to vote and something, a motion was made and, you know, I have a duty to vote and vote my conscience. And I know we'll disagree on the merits of we didn't write the resolution or the merits of the language, but I do think I have a duty to vote what my personal position is and represents.
Yeah, and the point on that though, and look, I understand that, but I think you can make some comments, and I'm going to say that I'm going to hopefully get to question the mayor on this. But I mean, this is nothing but sticking the thumb in somebody's eye. I mean, it's like, you know, it's an abortion issue, the most decisive issue in American politics. If you read the resolution, it's one-sided. It doesn't address adoption. It doesn't address the concern for other people here in Tallahassee. Okay, it's just let's divide us. Okay, and look, you're one of the city commissioners. I would appreciate if you would make a motion to just withdraw the resolution. You can, if you want to address the abortion issue, run for friggin' statewide office. I mean, that's where it's dealt with. I mean, you know, it's the same thing, you know. So anyway, my play, you know, I don't ask very much, all right? But the point here is that this is just furthering what national and state political leaders do on both sides is they divide us. They find an issue and they just throw it in somebody's face. This is what's happening here on this issue. So I hope you'll take the opportunity to maybe even a motion to add adoption to the resolution where that's an option. You know, at least do something that will bring us together instead of divide us. Another issue is voting rights. You guys passed to give the election day off because God knows we don't have enough time to vote. And I guess this was a shot at nationally arguing that there are some of these voter suppression laws going on. Is voting an issue in Leon County?
I think we have one of the best supervisors or the best election office, and to really go out, you know, we do mail-in voting, a lot of early voting. There's a lot of opportunities to vote. I think when we look, if we divorce this conversation from this voting conflict that's happening nationally, you know, across the world, we see, you know, countries and places where Election Day is a day off because it does more than give the opportunity. I think it encourages the civic pride. Like, this day is off because of Election Day and we need to go out and vote. And I think that's important.
And I think that's a great point. But the point was, is the city commission, I don't know if it was you specifically, it was more about in response to, quote, you know, these suppressed voting laws that are taking place. And, again, another one of my pet peeves. I mean, if you look back at the couple of presidential elections, African Americans had a higher turnout than other people. And so to argue that system somehow is suppressing people from voting, look, I mean, for example, do you support voter ID? I mean, do you think someone should have a voter ID to vote?
An ID to vote? Yes, I support that.
How about drop boxes become a big issue that we never really even heard of? Do you think drop boxes should be monitored, or do you think they should just be put up somewhere where people can, anybody can throw a ballot in?
I think as long as the ballot is safe and can be verified to an individual voter the way we do mail-in votings, I don't have an issue with it. If those things start happening and in a scale and the supervisor says, hey, we're getting a lot of ballots that don't check out, that don't match signatures, that we can't reach the voter, then I think we should talk about it.
All right, two last things. How about can somebody that is being paid by a partisan group go around and collect ballots from people who have requested absentee ballots? In other words, they're basically going into so somebody requests an absentee ballot and somebody knocks on the door and says, hey, we're with this nonprofit. We're here to collect your ballot. Is that something you would support?
It would depend on if the ballot is secured, signed, and sealed, I would say. But I think it's the duty of both political parties, nonpartisans, whatever, to get everybody to vote. I also think we have an enormous responsibility to make sure that those votes are accurate and are accountable to an individual voter who's legally registered to vote.
All right. So your appointment to Police Review Board, we only got a minute. I'll tell you, you know, I did a little didn't take long to figure out that he works with Ben Crump Law. Again, did Ben Crump talk to you about this appointment? Is this something you think is, Ben Crump has, again, as another divisive figure, done a lot of good work, but also has made some statements on social media that are factually incorrect, sort of ginning up some racial animosity. What's your view on that?
I didn't talk to Ben about the appointment at all. Mr. Marcelin expressed interest. But my previous appointment said he didn't think the board was being effective, and Mr. Marcelin wanted to serve. And I think we need a widespread of opinions on there, and they can make recommendations, and the chief can decide yes or no whether to implement them.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. We'll have another riveting show on Thursday. It won't be Commissioner Matlow, maybe somebody else. So tune in. Have a great afternoon.